You're listening to the Divorce and Your Money Show, the number one podcast that discusses the complex business of divorce. I'm your host, Sean Lehman, MBA and certified divorce financial analyst. And in this episode, we're bringing in a licensed clinical psychologist. Her name is Dr. Robin Rocket, and she also has a great podcast that I encourage you to check out called Solo Parent Life. And she's going to talk to us about some of the emotions that she experienced during her divorce and how she worked through them. And this is coming from a doctor's angle. And you will learn a lot from this episode. We also talk about a lot about therapy, support groups, and how to take care of yourself and take care of the kids from an emotional perspective as well. And it's a topic that I don't get into a lot in the podcast. And so I hope you find her information insightful. And also for all of you who are single parents or going to soon be a single parent when this process is over, she has a very, very well-produced podcast with lots of great guests and experts, including herself, but many others as well, that can help you navigate the parenting aspects of this process. So without further ado, here's the interview with Robin. Today on the show, I have with me Dr. Robin Rocket, a licensed clinical psychologist and also host of the podcast called Solo Parent Life. Robin, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sean, for having me on. I appreciate it.
We're going to start with a little bit about your background and your story. You went through a divorce and you have some kids. Why don't you just set the stage for the listeners?
Sure. So I'd say about almost 5 years ago, I had very small children at the time. They were 6, 4, and 1. I have 2 boys and a little girl. Yeah, my divorce happened sort of unexpectedly. I had worked for when I had my first 2 kids and stopped working after I had my 2nd kid. So during the divorce, I was actually a stay-at-home mom, even though I'd kept my license up as a psychologist. So it was unexpected, and I was like, wow, now what do I do? I had to figure a lot out. I had to be a single mom. I had to go back into the workforce, something I hadn't done in like 3 or 4 years, and in a new community because I'd had a private practice I'm in Marin, which is on the other side of the Golden Gate Bridge from San Francisco, but my practice had actually been in the East Bay, which was over by Oakland. So I don't know, it was a journey, and that's what inspired me to create Solo Parent Life, because I realized, gosh, when you're going through divorce, it's a lot. It's overwhelming on so many different levels, but there's not a lot of resources for single parents. And in my situation, my kids were so young, a lot of my friends weren't getting divorced. I mean, that's different now. A lot of people have or are, you know, in the middle of divorces as our kids have gotten older. But back then when they were so young, I felt pretty alone. And I want to shout out to you, Sean. I wish I would have known about your podcast, Divorce and Money, because that would have been an incredible resource. So I have a private practice. I created one in Marin, and I see kids, teens, and families. I created a community. I worked really hard about finding support for myself, not just from family and friends, but I joined a divorce support group that was invaluable. And I just had a friend that I met through that support group on the show the other day to talk about her journey as a single mom.
This is good stuff. You got a lot that I already wanted. Get into a little bit more. So let's start with something you said at the beginning is that the divorce was unexpected.
Yeah.
You know, you're a psychologist. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the emotions that you experience and also that kind of people experience when that first, you know, what's going on? It all of a sudden hits that this is happening.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's overwhelming. And I don't want to say whether it's, in my case, the one being left or the one leaving. I think it's hard for everybody. But I think if you're the one being left and you weren't expecting it, that's kind of what I was saying it just felt pretty unexpected in that way. The different feelings, overwhelm, terrified, scared, sad, mad, lots of anger, feeling scared about the future. I think that was the biggest one. And the other one too that was really strong was loneliness, right? Because like I said, in my situation, there weren't a lot of people going through divorce. So I didn't really have people that were close to me to talk to about, like, you know, to really get what was going on. frankly, because it was unexpected, to our community. So a lot of my friends were just as shocked as I was. We were all kind of like regrouping. And that's why I really dug deep. And maybe it's because I'm a therapist. And so I want to reach out to people that I think can support me because I do that for people. But it's why I really reached out to this support group. I also was in individual therapy for a little while, just to kind of get grounded and to have a space. The support group met twice a month. And it was the biggest thing for it was, one, to deal with that loneliness, to not feel so alone in this really overwhelming situation, but also have a place to put all of those feelings, the fear, the anger, the sadness, the grief kind of stuff, so that I could go back to being a mom every day and working on my career and do those other things. And I found that was really essential. I think sometimes we want to compartmentalize it, put those feelings away, or we want to start dating quickly and get into a newfound love. But, you know, those early days, as hard as they are, it actually is important to settle down and really get in touch with the feelings about that, the fact that, you know, there's essentially a death here, a death of the family, a death of the marriage, and cope with that so that any future decisions you make, whether in your, I guess it's financially or in mind, it's sort of self-care or parenting, it's with more groundedness.
So let's jump into the support group a little bit more. How did you find a support group in the first place?
I Googled it. I looked for divorce support groups in my area. There weren't a lot. There were only two. And I also looked through Meetup at the time. And the one that I chose was Susan Goodwin. She'd written a couple of books about divorce. So I figured, and she'd been doing this support group for a long time. The other one was run by a couple. And so that just seemed to be a good fit for me. And then I gave her a call and we talked for a little bit. Sometimes they'll do interviews. They'll meet with you before the support group. She didn't do that. We had like a 15, 20 minute call on the phone. But that helped too, right? I got a sense of her. She got a sense of me. And then she let me know, you know, if there was kind of space available for it. And then typically what happens is they ask for a commitment, which I think is important, you know, like 3 months or 6 months. Because again, you know, it's hard to open up to people and know, are they going to understand me? Is it going to be safe? Can I trust these people? But the essential part of a support group is that it's confidential. So, you know, when you go in and you talk about your situation, your soon-to-be ex-husband or ex-wife, the kids, it's meant to be a really supportive, safe, confidential space. And then the leader's there to kind of guide and make sure that, you know, the conversation's going in a way that's productive and helpful and supportive.
And when you're in the room of a support group, are you sharing your story? How does that work for someone who's thinking about it? Do you bare your heart to everyone or do people share similar things? How does that all work out?
Well, I think each leader probably has their own style, but the way that Susan did it, which I thought was quite lovely, is first of all, it was an hour and a half. So they run between an hour to 2 hours. This one was an hour and a half. Some meet weekly, bi-monthly, or once a month. Mine met twice a month. I felt like the every 2 weeks was just the right amount of time. Once a week is a little more intense, so I had time to process in those 2 weeks. So when I came in, yeah, it was a lot of in the moment, bearing your soul. And at the same time, not constructive. So it's not you're going in to bash your ex or anything. You might have some angry feelings that come up and you might say some things that you want to say to them, but you can't, so you say it in the group. But the whole premise, again, is to sort of help you understand your feelings, what your plan is, how you want to move forward. But you have to start with your feelings, right? Talking about them, feeling them. And again, you know, I find with being a single parent, you can't be mad or sad all the time. Like, you got to show up for your kids. You got to show up at work. You got things you got to do, right? It's all on you now. And so to have that consistent space to do that, at least for me, was very, very healing because it allowed me to sort of move through it. Because how I felt in the first 3 months was very different how I felt 6 to 9 months later, and then how I felt a year to 2 years later, right? It's just a kind of a process that everyone goes through.
You said you also went to therapy too. What was kind of the purpose of doing both? And what's the difference between going in the group and sharing your feelings versus going to a therapist and sharing your feelings?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. So the support group, like I was saying, is sort of more supportive. They're usually run by licensed therapists, but not necessarily. It's meant to more of a check-in of how you're doing and then how you want to move forward. Individual therapy goes deeper into that. It's going to talk more, depending on the type of therapist that you're seeing, but, you know, more about sort of the the patterns in your life that maybe were coming up in your marriage, how you feel about yourself, how you're taking in this loss, how you're grieving it. Does it bring up any old family patterns or memories, to kind of work through it on a deeper level, so that I kind of look at individual therapy. It's helping people sort of gain more insight on who they are in the world, how they see themselves in the world, and how they see others. And when we go through a big traumatic experience like a divorce, all of our stuff is going to come up, right? It's just going to get upheavaled. And that can be very painful and hard, but it also can be an opportunity for growth, right? An opportunity to go, you know, I need to do this differently, or I need to try to see this differently, or this is how my marriage was and I can see how I contributed to it with compassion, but with clarity, and how I want to do this differently moving forward.
And we've talked a little bit about external help, so be it a therapist or a support group. What about yourself? You know, you're in charge of you at the end of the day. And
yeah,
one of the things that I see, even though I don't necessarily have any expertise in them, is people will, eat poorly, or a big one I see amongst the guys in particular is a lot of drinking, a bunch of visits to the bar instead of the gym. What kind of things did you do, or do you recommend people do to take care of themselves through this process?
First, it would depend on where you are in the process. I think in those very early days when people are feeling pretty shaken up, really basic self-care, and you're not always going to want to do it. I mean, it's not unusual for people to go through some really big depressive feelings, right? Feeling really sad and grieving. I mean, you're grieving the loss of something. So the basics of just eating and sleeping, getting a good night's rest, reaching out to others, having a place to process your feelings so that you, if you do find you're going to the bar regularly, you know, pay attention to that and go, okay, I need to find another way to grieve. Going and drowning it in some beers every night is probably not going to be helpful. If you have a friend going through this and you see them going to the bar often, you know, really approach them with compassion and remind them, you know, hey, you know, I see you're going through a hard time. What can you do differently? So being aware, and also, but having expectations you're going to hit the gym a whole bunch or eat healthy every day is also too high. So when you're really going through the grieving process, you might overeat or undereat. I know that for me, I had a really hard time eating. I was quite anxious. So I found that I lost weight because, not intentionally, but because I was so anxious, my appetite was less. And so I was eating less. And I noticed it, friends and family noticed it. So what I tried to do is be mindful of what I was eating and make sure I was eating. Like even if it was, you know, half my plate, it was a healthy salad, you know, even if I didn't always feel like it. And then again, I also really made sure I had space to be heard and to process my feelings. And it doesn't always even have to be individual therapy or support group. Maybe it's just a friend, you know, maybe it's just hanging around other single parents who just kind of get it. Or maybe it's finding a new hobby. The other thing I did that helped was I really got into tennis. I hadn't been in tennis in a while. And that just, I didn't want to just go to the gym. That was too isolating. I wanted to be around other people. So I started playing tennis again and got onto a team and made friends through that way. And it was perfect because it got me outside. It got me moving my body. It got me being social. And it got my mind off of the divorce for, you know, an hour during that lesson or an hour during the tennis game.
And what about during the moment? And what I mean is that sometimes something will happen. Maybe you get a letter from your spouse's attorney, or you have to go to a mediation session, or any number of things flare up. And all the emotions you talked about before, they have that instant where all of a sudden they hit you, one or many. What do you do to kind of protect yourself and keep calm in the instant?
First of all, it's so important, right? Because you don't want to respond in an email or a text, because that can, you know, that's a record, especially if you're having to go to court to do, you know, around finances or around custody. So I think when your feelings get big, whether they're sad, grief, or they're anger and just helplessness, is slow down and breathe. You know, really take a moment. Because if we respond when we're feeling really emotional, it may not be the real choice that we wanted to make in the long run. It might feel really good in that moment, but it might not be so helpful in the bigger picture. The other thing is to, so slow down, breathe. The other thing is to give yourself options. So one thing I've found helpful and other people have found helpful going through those early days is if you do get a letter from the attorney, or let's say a difficult text from your soon-to-be ex, call a friend first. You know, have somebody identified, a friend, a brother, a sister, someone in the family, and say, you know, when I get something and I don't know what to do and I feel really upset, can I call you before I call them or text her or email them and just vent and just sort of like, oh, I got this and this is how I'm feeling, kind of get it out. Because when we're feeling really emotional, we're not thinking in a way, we're not using the parts of our brain that make the really good choices. We're using that back primitive brain, fight, flight, right? We're, you know, really emotional. To be able to make good choices, we have to slow down. The other one that a mediator told me about is wait 24 hours. So if you get a difficult email or a text and you're really upset about it, confused, upset, angry, don't respond for a full 24 hours.
Yeah, I have a friend actually on that very point, a business person, and they would get an upsetting message and they would actually write out exactly what they wanted to say in that moment, just in a different program so it wouldn't actually get sent, and then would wait 24 hours and reread it and say, with perspective, would they send that same message? And universally, they deleted the whole thing and wrote something a lot more pleasant, or I'll just say, you know, a little bit more professional. But it was for that very reason, is when you're in the heart of it, you have that fight or flight response, and all of a sudden you want to fire off some sort of response, and it's not ultimately productive in the long run for you.
That's exactly right. And I love that he was allowing himself to have a voice for it, right? So he wrote it in a different program. But when you said he had a different perspective, part of it is, again, he calmed down. So he was using the parts of his brain, the executive function, the frontal lobe, the part that we use to make the good choices in our life, right? But no one accesses that part of their brain when we're feeling really, really emotional. And it doesn't mean we're not supposed to feel emotional. It's sort of like giving yourself permission to feel emotional and be upset and this is going to be really hard, but also permission that you don't have to know the answer or respond right away, that you can figure this out tomorrow or you can call a friend to get some perspective and calm down.
Yeah, I think that's great. And I want to shift gears for a moment. Your podcast is called Solo Parent Life. And so I know you have many thoughts on parenting, and that's not a subject we cover a lot on the show. And so I do want to get some advice from you on some subjects in particular. You know, you said you had, you know, at the time, the kids were young. I think the oldest was 6 when mm-hmm. you went through divorce. How do you communicate what's going on, that mommy and daddy aren't going to be living in the same house anymore?
Oh, yeah, that's a hard one. Yeah, they were 6, 4, and 1. And so the conversation at that time mainly happened with our oldest, Stephen, when he was 6. Tyler, who was 4 at the time, was kind of there, but wasn't really quite understanding what was going on. The first thing I tell parents when they need to tell their kids, or they want to tell their kids, you know, mommy and daddy are separating, divorcing, is to first try to get on the same page about what they want to say to their kids. And also take into consideration the age of your kids. So, you know, what you say to a 6-year-old is going to be very different than what you would explain to a 16-year-old, right? So ideally, you want both of you in the room with your kid, which is what we did. And we had talked before we talked to Stephen about what we wanted to say. We kept it very brief and left more room for him to have his feelings and reactions. A lot of times kids, no matter what their ages are going to be usually most concerned about how this is going to affect them. It's going to be very normal. You know, like, when am I going to be at whose house? Who's going to get me to basketball practice? Who's going to take me to school every morning? Where am I going to do my homework? You know, that kind of thing. And that's, you know, just to understand that that's normal and that's, you know, not unusual. It's kids' way of kind of putting their world back into perspective. So if you can work through those before you talk to them, it's not essential, but with your partner, kind of at least at the beginning, a basic plan of sort of when they're at mom's house, when they're at dad's house, who's going to be taking them to school and all those kinds of logistics, and be able to answer those questions, that can be really helpful to kids. Really, the main thing is to give them space for their feelings and let them know, you know, that both of you still really care about them, you know, that this isn't their fault and that you love them. And that even though this is sad and going to be hard, it's also going to be okay.
I think that's great. And then do you monitor them? You know, I guess only Stephen was of fully cognizant age at the time of kind of what's happening, but do you monitor changes in behavior or how do you kind of keep an eye on them?
Absolutely. Kids are different on how they move through this. So we all know that divorce is hard for kids and the parents, hard for everybody. Now, to back up a little bit, research shows on this, the long-term effects of divorce, the ones that we really worry about for kids is when there's conflict. So whether that's a married couple or a divorcing couple, when there's conflict around the children, so arguing, belittling, physical violence, emotional abuse, that does the biggest damage long-term. Divorce is hard and there's going to be grieving and the kid's going to need to work through that. But that's not typically what causes more of these long-term issues for children. It's really the conflict.
And just what would be an example of a long-term issue?
Different kinds of either during transition times, like drop-off, pick-up, the parents get into arguments. When one kid is at one house, that parent is talking badly about the other parent very openly. So you're putting kids in position of having to choose. So if, mom's putting down dad while kid's at mom's house, that's really painful because the kids, they love both mom and dad. And so that can cause a lot of pain and I think repercussions later in life. The other thing is just, mom and dad arguing in front of the children. Even if it's something simple like, Johnny left their basketball shoes at the house and they had to go back and get them before practice, kind of thing. This is what's really hard, for parents because they're emotional and they're going through a really hard time too. And so my podcast, I really try to reiterate, that what you're asking me a lot about, that self-care, being compassionate and having a lot of space to take care of yourself so that when you do have to interact with your ex or the kids are saying, yeah, we were over at dad's house and we got to play, 3 hours of video games, that you're not going to be negative in front of the kids. You're going to be able to breathe, slow down, and have a neutral response so that the kids aren't put in the middle in all of that. And that's the biggest gift you can give them, really. Very hard to do, especially if you've got a lot of feelings about the divorce or a lot of anger toward your ex. But keeping your eye on that bigger picture with the kids but they also need to be able to love each parent and have their own relationship with each parent. And all of those adult issues as to why they're getting divorced is adult issues. And it's not, to try to protect the kids from those by allowing more of a neutral, loving space for them to be with both parents.
And then over time, as the years go on, how does that relationship develop with the kids separated? How do you kind of keep them from having a negative perception of relationships between parents?
The way I look at it is I always go back to they need to be able to feel loved, right? When you were a kid, we always wanted to be loved and accepted by our parents. And all of our parents and all of us parents are very imperfect, right? We're human and we make mistakes and we don't always get it right. But from the child's perspective, they want to feel loved and accepted, and they want to know that it's okay that who they love is also accepted. And so I find if I'm having a moment where maybe like a common one, I think with a lot of families, is there's very different, the way I parent and some of my roles are very different from my exes. And so the kids like to talk about that. And as they get older, more astute at pointing that out. That's a great opportunity to put down the other parent, put the kids in the middle, and then, like you said, them to have a negative attitude toward one of the other parents. Neutrality is essential. So breathing, slowing down, and not sweating the small stuff. So if the rules are different, even if it's not a rule I would never have in a million years in my own house, is it a safety issue? No, then it's okay. But so that's what I'm saying in my mind, right? That's how I'm talking myself down from like, this is not something I need to make a big deal. And being neutral with my kids and being matter of fact, well, it's different at mom's and dad's house. I hear that you've got that going on over there. And this just, that's not my rules. This is what I do here. You're okay with what's going on there. You're okay with what's going on here. That way, as they have their feelings about the different houses, the different parenting styles, maybe new partners, that's another big one. you're not putting yourself in the middle. You're being neutral so that the kids have an opportunity to have their own feelings about it and work through it. And that's how they're going to process through stuff. If they get stuck because they can't talk about the differences in the family because it makes that parent mad or upset or has a phone call, an angry phone call to the other parent, kids are going to shut down and they're going to figure out, you know, to keep the status quo, I need to pull away my feelings or thoughts or needs in this moment. And that's what we don't want to do. We want to open that up for that. And in the best case scenario, you've got a strong co-parenting relationship so that if your kids are talking about stuff that you need to question or you're not sure about, you can call, you could email that co-parent and say, you know, hey, this is going on, or hey, I've noticed this change, or I've noticed more questions coming up or more upset about me or you, you know, just want to give you a heads up. So that best case scenario, working together as co-parents on supporting that child and their emotional needs at the time.
I think that's very helpful information. Robin, where can people learn more about you?
Soloparentlife.com is website. And yeah, I don't have quite as many episodes as you, but I've got some really great episodes on co-parenting and mediation and parenting and dating. And now you were just on with finances. And so yeah, I just encourage people to check it out.
Awesome. And we'll include a link to that in the show notes. Well, Robin, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you, Sean. I really appreciate it.
Now, before you go, I want to make sure you get some really important information. All you have to do is go to divorceandyourmoney.com. The first thing you do on the website is sign up for the email list. You'll see a little box that says get updates and tips, and I will send you exclusive articles and content that you won't find anywhere else. And it goes directly to you, and it's a great way to reach me and ask me your questions. Second, on the coaching page at divorceandyourmoney.com, you can learn about our personalized coaching services. And here's the reality. Many of you are making financial mistakes or not getting all that you deserve as part of the divorce process. Or maybe you're just having a hard time making sense of it all and making rational decisions during this emotional time. And look, your divorce attorney is good. It's great to have a divorce attorney, but divorce attorneys are not really financial experts. And so ask yourself a simple question. Did your attorney, if you have one, explain some of the details that we just talked about in this episode? The financial issues in divorce can be really complicated, and that's why there's over 100 episodes of information, hours and hours and hours of information just related to the complex financial things that you need to be thinking about as you get divorced. And one of the big questions you might have if you've been listening to the podcast or read the book, Divorce and Your Money, The No-Nonsense Guide, or have been reading the articles that I send just to the email listeners, you might be asking, well, how does this apply to me? How does this apply to my situation and my divorce and what's going on in my life? Well, the only way to really find out, and the only way I can help you in your specific situation, is through the personalized coaching sessions. And I get to work with you across the United States, from California to New York, and everywhere in between, in person, by phone, and by email, depending upon what you need. And all you have to do to start getting help is go to divorceandyourmoney.com/coaching. You'll see some videos there, and you just fill out a short form, answer a few questions, and we will set up a complimentary introductory call. Here's the deal, is once you sign that divorce settlement, there's no going back. So the sooner you get help, the better. Finally, subscribe to the podcast and make sure you automatically get updates with all the new episodes that are coming out. And leave a review. A 5-star review on iTunes really helps other people discover this show. I'm your host, Sean Lehman, MBA and certified divorce financial analyst. Thank you for listening.